It is Thursday, December 7th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Sarah Williams in Washington. Coming up, Palestinian-Israeli clashes erupt following U.S. President Donald Trump's recognition of Jerusalem as the Israeli capital. Senator Al Franken announces his resignation following reports of sexual harassment. And we look at preparing teens for careers in healthcare. It's all ahead. Clashes between Palestinian protesters and Israeli troops erupted Thursday in the West Bank and Gaza, the day after U.S. President Donald Trump recognized Jerusalem as the Israeli capital. In the West Bank, crowds of demonstrators threw stones at the Israeli forces and set tires afire in Ramallah, the seat of the Palestinian government, where a thick plume of black smoke hovered over the city. Jeremy Meyer is associate professor at the Schar School of Policy and Government at George Mason University. He tells International Edition's Lori London his reaction to Trump's decision.
For 22 years, presidents have refused to take this step, even when on the campaign trail, just as Trump did, they promised to do it. Trump finally did it.
He says that there's still a path to peace, but it would appear that he's definitely taking a side, or the U.S. is taking a side. Do you think peace is possible under these circumstances, and what does this do to that peace process?
Well, one of the reasons that prior presidents have never taken this step, even though it is politically popular with large numbers of American Jews, with America's ally Israel, and with an increasing number of evangelical Christians, is because, one, it would make us look prejudiced against the Palestinians. Two, and most importantly, a third intifada might be the result. As you might know, both intifadas, which is the Palestinian uprisings in the streets of the West Bank and Gaza, happened because of an event, a trigger. In the second intifada, it was the visit by Prime Minister Sharon to the Temple Mount in Jerusalem. And if a simple visit can do that, a moving of an embassy could also be the thing that starts it. So The danger of a third intifada erupting with America as the cause has always given American policymakers hesitation and prevented them from taking this step.
Would you say that this would also put the U.S. in the position that it's no longer a neutral negotiator?
Well, I don't think many people outside America or the right wing of Israel think that America is a neutral negotiator between the Palestinians and the Israelis. We are on Israel's side. We have been Israel's strongest ally for decades. So this will hurt us somewhat, but as Trump put it in his speech, for 20 years, we haven't taken this step, and peace process certainly hasn't been going well. What's the downside in doing this? How could it get worse, I think, is what he's saying.
And do you think that that's a possibility, that it could actually make progress?
I don't think it's likely that this act will contribute to peace. But I don't think there was much hope for peace anyway, that with the ongoing growth of Israeli settlements in the West Bank and the disastrous embargo of the Gaza and the division in the Palestinian leadership, there really wasn't near-term prospects for peace anyway. So I think this is likely to make it worse, but it was already pretty bad. I also think we should be open to the idea that all the experts are wrong. Remember, it wasn't that long ago that all the experts like me were telling people that there was no way Trump could win. And he did. He broke all the rules on the campaign trail. He did things that would have killed any other previous candidate. He had scandals. He didn't release his tax returns. He engaged in personal attacks that would have made any previous presidential candidate ashamed. And he won. So It is not impossible that this bizarre move, this seemingly obsequious treatment toward the right wing of Israeli politics, will work. It's certainly not impossible.
Speaking of those settlements, Israel's continuing to build them. Under the Obama administration, they were condemning those actions and urging Israel not to continue as long as this was disputed territory. Would this give Israel carte blanche to just build away?
I think Israel already had carte blanche to build anyway. You know, Obama said some things. There were these momentary setbacks for the settler movement. But the settlements grew every year of Obama's presidency, just as they grew every year of Bush's, just as they grew every year of Clinton's. So the settlement growth, there seems to be an illusion in America that what we have in the Israel-Palestine issue is a frozen status quo. We don't. We are continually seeing changes in facts on the ground. Israel gets more and more land, more and more settlements, more and more people every year. And I don't think today's announcement is going to change that. It might give the Israeli right wing further boldness, but they were already very bold. And I would also point out one other thing. If you look at the international surveys on America's approval, how many citizens around the world trust America, there are only two countries where our image improved with the election of Donald Trump. One of them was Russia, the other was Israel. Obama was not that popular in Israel because of the kind of criticism right. that you mentioned, and also a widespread perception in the Israeli public that Obama was favorable to Muslims. And Trump is doing what he has done throughout his own presidency, his entire presidency, which is playing to his base. His base likes this move, so does Netanyahu.
Jeremy Meyer, associate professor at the Schar School of Policy and Government at George Mason University. He was speaking with International Edition's Lori London. Well, joining me here in the studio is social media editor Andrew Pelshevsky. So, Andrew, I know there's a lot of political news going on today.
Yes, a big breaking story. Senator Al Franken of Minnesota has resigned from the U.S. Senate after at least seven women have come forward with allegations of sexual assault. And I know we're going to be hearing a clip from the senator in a little bit. But people on social media were expecting this. Ever since Franken announced yesterday that he would be making an announcement today about his future in the U.S. Senate. We talked about on the show yesterday how eight U.S. Democratic senators were calling on Franken to resign. That number, as the day went on yesterday, ballooned to more than two dozen. But it really all started with New York Senator Kirsten Gillibrand. She's been a very vocal advocate for sexual assault victims during her time in the Senate. And it started with a Facebook post that she put up titled, "Senator Franken Should Step Aside." She wrote that we must not lose sight that this watershed moment is bigger than any one industry, any one party, or any one person, and then went on to say that while Senator Franken is entitled to have an ethics committee investigation, I believe it would be better for our country if he sent a clear message that any kind of mistreatment of women in our society isn't acceptable by stepping aside and letting someone else serve. And in fact, that is what he has done today. So that really kicked off and galvanized a lot of the loss of support from the Democratic senators, resulting in Franken's resignation. And the other big trending story today, Pearl Harbor, of course, December 7th, 1941, 76 years ago today, that the U.S. base at Pearl Harbor was attacked, killing more than 2,400 Americans. The survivors are sharing their stories on social media, but sadly, every year that number dwindles. So what we're seeing now is a lot of family members sharing their stories, even though they may have passed on, saying my father or grandfather or even great-grandfather was there and served. So we're seeing a lot of those tributes today.
All right. Thanks a lot, Andrew. That's social media editor Andrew Pelshevsky. Here are some of the top news stories that are trending. North Korea says the likelihood of war with the United States is an established fact. Strong winds are complicating California's fight against wildfires. Tens of thousands of people march in Brussels in support of Catalonia. And FBI Director Christopher Wray defends his agency before lawmakers. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on the voanews.com website. This is VOA.
This is Science in a Minute.
A new study by researchers at the Harvard Medical School and Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center finds that dying or dead cancer cells as the result of chemotherapy can continue to cause harm to the cancer patient. The study finds that debris from cells killed or are being killed by chemotherapy produces a kind of inflammation that stimulates aggressive tumor growth. The researchers say that their findings show similar effects that coincide with decades-old studies on radiation-generated cancer cell debris. To stop this recurring loop of destroying cancer cells that go on to encourage rapid tumor growth, the researchers found that resolvins, a class of naturally produced molecules, can stop the inflammation and encourage the digestion of the dead cancer cell debris. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This is International Edition on the Voice of America. I'm Sarah Williams. Coming up, Russian President Vladimir Putin seeks another term. U.S. Senator Al Franken announced Thursday he's leaving office amid mounting allegations that for years he made unwanted sexual advances on multiple women. Dozens of Franken's Democratic colleagues have said it was time for him to step down. Franken spoke on the U.S. Senate floor.
Some of the allegations against me are simply not true. Others I remember very differently. I said at the outset that the Ethics Committee was the right venue for these allegations to be heard and investigated and evaluated on their merits, that I was prepared to cooperate fully, and that I was confident in the outcome. You know, an important part of the conversation we've been having the last few months has been about how men abuse their power and privilege to hurt women. I am proud that during my time in the Senate, I have used my power to be a champion of women, and that I have earned a reputation as someone who respects the women I work alongside every day. I know there's been a very different picture of me painted over the last few weeks, but I know who I really am. Serving in the United States Senate has been the great honor of my life. I know in my heart that nothing I have done as a senator, nothing, has brought this honor on this institution. And I am confident that the Ethics Committee would agree. Nevertheless, today I am announcing that in the coming weeks, I will be resigning as a member of the United States Senate.
Senator Al Franken of Minnesota. Well, as expected, 65-year-old Russian President Vladimir Putin this week announced his intention to seek another six-year term to 2024 in next March's election. Having served as both president and prime minister, that would make Mr. Putin the country's longest-serving leader in modern times, except for Joseph Stalin during the Soviet era. Russia analyst Mark Adeli at the University of Melbourne in Australia tells International Edition's Victor Beatty the announcement is a mere formality given the little opposition he will face, including an unlikely challenge from lawyer and political activist Alexei Navalny.
At this point, it's hard to see who would be the alternative. He stands for continuity and stability, and that's what they probably want to project at this stage. It's very unlikely that he would face any serious opposition, given that the most likely candidate, Navalny, will not be allowed to run. Much of the media are controlled by the Kremlin. And the president seems to be genuinely popular in large sectors of the population. So I would be fairly confident in predicting a win for Putin.
According to an independent poll by the Levada Center, just 58% of those who responded said they would even bother to vote. That's down from 75% back in 2007. Is Putin fatigue setting in Russia?
It's possible. I mean, it might also simply be that people don't feel that they need to vote because he'll win anyway. I mean, 58% is not, by international standards, a very poor turnout for non-compulsory elections. But I would think that there will be quite some attempt to mobilize as many people as possible. And the Levada Center, I think their data can be taken fairly seriously. They are still an independent organization and a very serious polling organization.
One of the big questions, of course, is Mr. Putin, now 65, if he's in office until 2024, he'll be well into his 70s. What will life be like post-Putin? Do you see a future for Russia after Vladimir Putin leaves the world stage?
The Putins come and go, and Russia will remain, to paraphrase Comrade Stalin. Surely there's a future for Russia. It's at this point not clear who will replace him. It has been a problem, the kind of handover, I think, from one president to the next. Whether or not the democratic opposition can become stronger and organize enough to take power away from the establishment which is in place now is another question. I think that was one of the big mistakes the West made after 1991, that they decided that Russia had lost the Cold War and therefore one wouldn't have to pay any attention anymore. And now Russia made sure that we are paying attention again.
That is Mark Adeli of the University of Melbourne in Australia. This is VOA.
When news breaks, VOA Africa is there, bringing you news as it happens. Listen to Africa News Tonight, Monday through Friday at 1600 and 1800 UTC. And our five-minute newscasts come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
Hi, this is Larry London, the host of VOA's Border Crossing. I feature music and interviews with your favorite artists from all around the world. And you can not only listen, but you can interact live with us here in Washington, D.C. Border Crossings comes to you Monday through Friday at 1500 UTC GMT on VOA.
This is International Edition. Nurses are a crucially important part of the healthcare system. They have a wide range of responsibilities and require a sophisticated and practical set of skills. In Rockville, Maryland, a certified nursing assistant program gives high school students an opportunity to explore the real world of nursing. The training prepares them to take and pass certifying exams and begin a career in healthcare. Faiza Almazri has a story, and Faith Lapidus narrates.
Okay, so what am I going to start with?
Knock on the door.
Introducing yourself to patients. That's what Linda Hall, a nursing professor at Montgomery County College, starts with. It's all part of the skill set she wants these high school students to learn as part of the certified nursing assistant program she runs. The students practice everything on each other, from saying hello, to taking a pulse, to checking blood pressure, and thoroughly washing their hands.
In your fingers, and then this is my favorite, you do this, it'll get the soap into the nails so that it gets rid of the bacteria.
Then they move on to the second part of their training, meeting real patients for a chance to put what they've just learned into practice.
Hello, how are you?
Okay, your name is?
Kelly Wilson.
17-year-old Kelly Wilson says she joined the CNA program to learn more about the healthcare profession.
I think one of the most important things I've learned is about, one, patient care, like how to treat patients. Even if I want to take it further, not just a nurse, as a doctor, it's always important to keep your patients and their mental, emotional, and physical body like in one and make sure that you're treating them respectfully and well.
Kelly is one of a dozen students from a local high school in the program, now in its third year. Her classmate, Natalia Estrada Guerra, who dreams of becoming a nurse, says it's a priceless opportunity.
Ever since I've been little, I've been wanting to do something in nursing and helping others because I really love doing that. So I found out about the CNA program and I really thought it was interesting and an opportunity for me since it's, you know, free. So this is kind of like a first-hand experience on like nursing and helping other people out.
The four-day-a-week course, which takes place outside school hours, combines 88 hours in the classroom with 60 hours of clinical training, learning skills that nursing assistants use every day.
Such as brushing teeth, brushing dentures, giving a bath, putting someone on a bedpan, doing perineal care, feeding someone. All of those skills are part of the 20 skills that they need to know before they can graduate. There is also a passing grade of 80. They cannot even take the final exam if their average grade is not 80 or above.
Completing the program and passing the CNA exam open a whole new horizon for these students.
When the class is completed and the grades are in, they get a license from the state of Maryland to be certified nursing assistant. Then they prep for the geriatric nursing assistant license, which is an extra step up for them.
The CNA training program takes place at Ingleside at King Farm, a retirement community that has an assisted living home on site. The facility's healthcare administrator, John Holly, says the program was founded by neurologist William Leahy, who serves on its board of directors and supervises medical services there.
So the vision is simply to provide individuals an opportunity and to provide for the best care that people can receive.
And residents here welcome the young people.
Oh, they really enjoy having the young, enthusiastic students, and they enjoy the additional attention that they get because there are more students here.
And the students love it too.
I actually got to know better the residents. I wasn't really sure, you know, I thought they were all fragile and, you know, you gotta be really careful with them. But honestly, they love when you help them. They love when you give them a hand because they always need it. So I learned more to connect with them and to interact with them in a better way. I think you need to be very patient, very driven.
Interacting confidently and paying attention to every detail are some of the skills these students need to learn if they want to have successful careers in healthcare. For writer Faiza El-Masri, I'm Faith Lapidus, VOA News.
Thanks, Faith, and that's our show. I'm Sarah Williams. Thanks so much for joining us.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The 2 weeks between International Day for the Elimination of Violence Against Women, observed on November 25th, and Human Rights Day, celebrated on December 10th, are dedicated to 16 days of activism against gender-based violence, 16 days of campaigning around the world to challenge and raise awareness of gender-based violence, and mobilizing people everywhere to bring about change. Gender-based violence is directed against individuals because of their actual or perceived biological sex or gender identity. It may be, and at times is, aimed at boys and men. But because most cultures confer lower social status on females, thereby creating an unequal power dynamic, women and girls are more likely than men and boys to be sexually or physically assaulted. Gender-based violence crosses every social and economic class, ethnicity, race, religion, and education level, and transcends international borders. It is perpetuated by the failure of governments and societies to recognize and value the human rights of women and girls, even though such discrimination causes harm to society as a whole. We know that violence against women and girls undermines global peace and security, said Secretary of State Rex Tillerson. It weakens the social fabric that binds families and communities together and prevents countries from achieving social stability and economic development. International Day for the Elimination of Violence Against Women and the accompanying 16 days of activism against gender-based violence are observed by the international community in order to shine a light on this scourge. We continue to recognize that violence against women remains a persistent threat and an obstacle to achieving women's equality. The United States is especially alarmed by violent extremist groups' use of violence against women as a tactic of terror to suppress women, recruit terrorists, and stigmatize communities. We denounce terrorist organizations' use of forced conscription, sexual exploitation, and abuse, including sex trafficking of women and girls, said Secretary of State Tillerson. The United States will never waver in its support for women's equality. In partnership with governments, international organizations, and civil society around the world, we will continue to work to end violence against women and girls globally and to ensure that women and girls have equal rights and opportunities.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.